Magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt His name together. It's Wednesday, May 17th, 2017. We're marching right along here in May. Mm. Jason, what do you think?
Yeah. We're coming. The weather's beautiful outside. It's
finally
amazing. Yeah, after the deluge, the mini flood.
I haven't seen the mosquitoes, though. Usually after all that water, then it's like the fear of all these mosquitoes. So not yet. A few here and there.
Yeah, I think it was Sunday night. We were sitting out in our backyard, and we're like, gosh, the temperature is so beautiful, and there's no bugs.
Yeah.
Like, we just sit out there, even at dusk, when it was starting to get dark, and there was no bugs at all. And I thought, this is amazing.
Yeah.
This is an amazing time.
Good time. Great weather. Most everyone's mowed their lawn a number of times already. I'm only a few times. The mower's been in and out of the shop.
Oh, no. Yeah,
I don't know. A new mower is supposed to just work really well. I think I only have 15.6 hours on it, and I've had for a year. And I'm trying to work an issue because I busted my fourth belt.
Oh.
And that shouldn't be happening. And I just got it returned because the transmission belt broke.
Oh.
And that was another issue. The bearings went bad, so there's some adjustment not made, all under warranty. But it's like I have to go in and just say, you know, I think this is a lemon. Four belts in 15.6 hours. And a couple times they've done a loaner, and I've loved the loaner.
Yeah.
It's like the upgraded model.
Oh, sure, they gave you the nicer one.
Yeah, and so it's like, so I got to kind of think that all through. But but the hummingbird sightings have been very minimal. This should be when they're back in flock, or whatever you'd say a multiple amount of hummingbirds are. I don't think they're a flock. They're a something. But just sparse sightings once in a while. I'm like, where are they all? So they're supposed to return. History has it that they go South America, wherever, and then they return to the same feeders every year. That's what I've heard. But I don't know where they're all at.
I don't know anything about it.
Anyways, is it Arbor Day again?
Maybe they've been impacted by some new immigration policy or something.
Yeah. Well, I told Esther, you know, she was like, is that true, Dad? You know, little children, you say something and they think it's true, which is that, you know, I got to be careful. But I said, you know, I wonder if because I spoiled them so much, because I had the nectar out throughout the summer and into the early fall, that they got nice and fat, and then they forgot how to go to flowers and find the nectar. So they, like, died off down there. They didn't know what to do. It's like, oh, where's all the feeders?
You know,
for
the
us?
Stories we tell our kids are supposed to have happy endings.
Yeah,
not they got fat and died.
Yeah. So I'm hoping they start returning because, like, she said, is that true? And I said, no, I think they'll be coming back soon. So they are in the area. Hey, let me point out a couple things that are going on, and then let's talk a little about trusting in God. Because it seemed through our prayer time and many of the comments we are saying off air as we see God at work in individuals' lives and just even the recent Mother's Day, how that was celebrated, and many moms are having to entrust their children to the Lord and giving up that control or oversight because their children might be far away or taking on a husband or moving out or moving on. So we'll talk a little about trusting in God, but this Sunday night, Tammy Renee Harris is coming to Decatur to the Central Christian Church, and it should be a great concert. It's free. Admission is free. Everyone's welcome. It'll happen at 4 p.m., and it'll include J.D. Miller on the piano and other guests like Lavelle Pete. He'll be on the drums, Conrad Lee, bass guitar, Stephen McCleary, and some other singers. I think Stephen will also be on the keyboard. But a free concert this Sunday, May 21st, 4 p.m. You can find out more by calling 217-428-4336, 217-428-4336. And, Stephen McCleary will be backing her up with a couple other singers, I guess, that he's trained over the years. But if you tuned in on Monday's edition of Mark and Friends, I think I played three different songs by Tammy Renee Harris. She has that Broadway-style singing. And she'll sing some of those popular favorites by Barry Manilow and others, but she'll also sing a number of selections. Christian music, she has that great CD, Rainbow's End, and other CDs that will be available this Sunday, May 21st, 4 p.m. at the Central Christian Church. And then the Ivan Perker concert that's coming about 3 weeks away. We have wristbands, so if you want to stop by the center and pick those up, instead of having tickets, everyone will wear wristbands so we can easily identify you and make sure you're in that VIP section or the general seating. And we'll be set up with a special meet and greet for those that get the VIP tickets. Those are $25 in advance or $10, just general open seating. And we'll begin the concert at 7 p.m., but the meet and greet reception will be at 6 p.m. So find out more at greatnewsradio.org, greatnewsradio.org. And the night of the concert, it'll be $15 at the door. So plan on that, and it'll be happening on Saturday, June 10th, so about 3 or so weeks away. So exciting times around here at the Great News Radio Center, and it's exciting because we're learning to trust in God. Bring it back.
Well, aren't we always learning to trust in God? Yeah. I mean, if we're not in a season where we're learning to trust in God, then we are probably trusting far too much in our own selves. And the Apostle Paul would give us a corrective in that in multiple different places in the epistles. He would tell us that our strength is not our own, that submission and weakness is actually our strength because God becomes our strength. And we have to trust in God. I mean, we have to really lay before Him everything and say, Lord, I don't know how. I mean, there's so many things in our life, if we're just honest, that we think that we got worked out or we think that we've got a good plan. We think, well, you know what? I mean, I'm just killing it in this area. Like, I don't need God's help. And now a lot of us who are Christians wouldn't necessarily say that. We wouldn't say that, but we may live like that. We may actually do things like that. We're like, well, I know. I know exactly how this needs to be. I mean, how much of our life do we not take before the Lord in prayer? And when I say this to you, I'm not saying this to you as a critique to you, the listener. I'm saying that because I see that in my own life, too, where I have to stop and say, you know, why didn't I pray about that? Why didn't I seek first the kingdom of God and ask God what He believes about that? Why did I think, you know what, Lord, You have clearly gifted me in this, so I must not need You in this. I'm okay. I can just push through and I can do it my way. And yet the Apostle Paul would say that I've learned in plenty and want and in abundance and scarcity that I need Christ in everything, that in all things Christ strengthens me. And so we need the strength of Christ in everything that we do. And it was really impressed upon me as my wife and I both, one of the rare moments where she came up and she helped share the message on Sunday morning at our church out of Exodus chapter 2. And Exodus chapter 2 is a wonderful picture of what it means to trust God and what it looks like to actually trust in God in very difficult situations. I think probably the situations where we don't trust God today are far less than the situation that we would look at in Exodus chapter 2. Because in Exodus chapter 2, which follows 1, the situation for the Israelites is horrendous. I mean, a Pharaoh came into power who does not know Joseph. And because he doesn't know Joseph, he doesn't know Joseph's people, so he doesn't care about them. And he doesn't know Joseph's God, so he doesn't care that these people are God's people, that God has a plan and a purpose for them. So Pharaoh sets himself up in opposition against God. And so these people become kind of in the crosshairs of all of Pharaoh's fears, all of Pharaoh's worries, because Pharaoh says, these people are becoming too numerous. If my enemies attack me, these people may actually side with my enemies and overthrow me. Now, what's interesting in the text, isn't it? The Pharaoh, it never crosses Pharaoh's mind that if I just treat these people well and love them, that they would never side with my enemies. Right. But instead he goes, you know, oh my gosh, you know, maybe they might go with my enemies. And so it says, set taskmasters over them and begins to brutally enslave them. It says brutally and harshly. But the Bible's awesome because the Bible says, but they still multiplied and became numerous. And then Pharaoh, slavery isn't working, so Pharaoh gets two midwives and he says, you know, here's the deal. When the Hebrew woman gives birth, if it is a baby boy, then you kill it. You do it in such a way that it'll look like it's a stillbirth. So, you know, it won't look like we're necessarily doing an evil thing here, but we need to take care of these Hebrews because they're becoming too numerous. And the Hebrew midwives say that they won't do that. And what happens out of that? The Hebrews become numerous and they multiply.
Well, they don't tell Pharaoh, but they know of, because of God or conviction.
Yeah, they fear God and walking in the fear of the Lord, they're not going to do that wicked thing. And so then that little bit of text in one ends in saying, and it became numerous and they multiplied again. And then you get to the end of chapter 1 where Pharaoh just openly to all of his people says, any of you who are Egyptians, if you see a Hebrew baby boy, throw him in the river. Now, many of us think, throw him in the river. Well, you know, that's horrendous. Babies can't swim. Add the element of the crocodile, because the Nile is a crocodile-infested place. And so when they say they're throwing the babies into the river, they're saying crocodile food. I mean, this is brutal. This is horrible. This is a culture that's celebrating openly the death of babies and probably watching it happen. It wasn't as if this is happening in some back room. That's the nature of evil that we see in chapter 1 of the Exodus, is evil starts out as closeted fears, and those fears begin to run over the culture, and then it becomes as closeted acts, and then those acts begin to run over the culture. I mean, it's just the same as we would see with abortion, or we see now with euthanasia. What was done one time in a back room or a back alley is now done publicly, and it's even supported and argued for publicly.
And not only maybe done publicly, but maybe as entertainment. You know how, sure, like the Colosseums here, hey, let's see how many crocodiles show up because it's going to be feeding
time. You never know, and I can only side with it. It had to have been wicked because it was something that they were celebrating and doing openly. And whenever we do wicked things openly, we love the sin way too much. Mm-hmm. And so all that to say is that sets the stage for this moment where the Israelite people are going to have to move towards trusting God. And so you see that the culture has gone south. There's wickedness abounds. You're part of an oppressed people who don't know how they're going to live. And not only that, but if you're a Hebrew baby boy, things do not look good because there is a decree of death that is over you. And so things are not going good. This is a play. This is not like, do I have to trust the Lord today? This is, you know, with like my money or my kids or that. This is like, am I going to trust the Lord with my life and my future? And so it begins in chapter 2, and it says now. And I love the word now in the beginning of there because, like I shared with our church on Sunday morning, I said that means now God is at work. God is at work now, continually, now. If you're in the middle of a situation and you say, is God at work? You go, yes, now. He's at work now. Any point in your life, you can point your finger down and go, now, and he's at work, because he never stops working. Yeah. And so I love in the Bible here, it says, now. It says in chapter 2, as we go on, it says, a man from the house of Levi went and took as his wife a Levite woman. Hmm. Now, we would say to ourselves, well, why these details? What's the point of saying that they're both Levites? Because for us, those of us reading back from where we are, we know that Levites are the people who have been set aside by God for the work of God. So right away in this passage now, God is at work. How's he working? By people that he has set aside for his work. That's why we have that information. That information is useless to us if we don't know that information. And so these are people who God is going to use. And then it says the woman conceived and bore a son. Friends, God is at work. Anytime a baby is born, God is at work. The Psalms tell us that you knit me in the inward parts. You formed me in the womb. Every time a baby is born, it is the work of God and the gift of God, because he's the only one who can do that. The Bible instructs us to that. And so she conceived and bore a son, and she saw that he was a fine child. He was fine. But we have to understand the original language, because the word fine there actually means good. And the same word for good is the word that's used in Genesis chapter 1, when God saw things and they were good. That means this baby, if you're reading the original Hebrew text, you say, this baby is good like God says he's good. And that's because now God is at work through people that he set aside for his work. And so now you begin to see that there's not only something special about these people. And by the way, when I say that there's something special about these people, what I want you to understand is that the special thing about them is that they were open and obedient to being used by God. It's their faithfulness that makes them special. Other than that, they were absolutely ordinary people, just like every single one of us. The amazing thing about them is that they would actually submit themselves to being a part of the work that God is doing. And that's what I think that we need. That's a big picture point we need to glean from this, is that they were obedient. They loved God. They wanted to be a part of what God was doing. They were like, Lord, set me aside and use me for your work. And he says, okay, here comes a baby. But life's going to be tough, because when you ask God, when you trust God in that way, you're going to be put in situations that are difficult, because he doesn't send them a baby girl. Because baby girls, if we're at chapter 1, they get to live. He sent them a baby boy who is under a death sentence. And so immediately the work of God isn't always – if for you, every time God's at work, it's just like unicorns and Skittles and blessings, then that's an issue, because sometimes what God does is hard, because we have to learn to trust him. We have to learn to trust. And the only way we're going to learn to trust God is if we're put in situations that are difficult. Mm-hmm. And that's what she's put in, because she said he was a fine child. He was good like God says good things are. And she hid him for 3 months. That verse, that little bit right there is loaded. She hid him for 3 months. Because this baby, he's a boy. He's under a death sentence. That means how much of this woman's time was spent going, shh, be quiet. Man, get the baby to be quiet. There's an Egyptian near here. Stop making so much noise. They'll throw him in the Nile. I mean, how many 24 hours a day this mother going like, if anybody hears him, he's going to die. She has to trust God every single day in this moment, because this is not easy territory. This is solely the territory of trusting God. And it says in verse 3, when she could hide him no longer, meaning, I believe, when God said to her heart, this is the day. You've trusted me for these 3 months, but now the rubber is really going to meet the road. You're going to have to really trust me. Really trust me. Because I'm going to ask you to do something difficult that you're not going to understand. And so, it says, she took for him a basket. And this word basket here in the original Hebrew language is so helpful, because this isn't a basket like we think a basket is. In the original Hebrew, the word is ark.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah, and so right away, that should make us think about Noah. It should make us think about God's saving grace. And if you lay the story of Noah over this, a basket that goes into the water, an ark that goes into the water that is a vessel of salvation. This basket, this ark that's going to go into the Nile, is going to carry it's going to be a vessel of salvation, where we're going to get Moses, who's going to be deliverer and lead the Hebrew people into the promised land. And so you start to see these allusions here that are really powerful. But she has to trust him. It says she took for him a basket, an ark, and made bulrushes and daubed it with bitumen and pitch. And she put the child in it and placed it amongst the reeds by the riverbank. I mean, again, you have to get into the emotion of this. This is a mother who loves her child. And so when it says she had to put bitumen and pitch on the basket, imagine a mother who is like every square inch of the basket, inspecting, re-inspecting. Did I get every spot? Is it perfectly waterproof? Is it going to sink? Are the crocodiles going to get it? What's going to happen? This is a mother who's frantically trying to care for and keep her baby. She's tried to do it for 3 months, and she could hide him no longer. And now she is trying to do whatever she can to prepare this vessel, this bubble of safety. I mean, just think about how as parents we try and keep our kids safe 24 hours a day, safe from hearing these things, from seeing these things. So, stranger danger, don't go over there. I mean, all the ways that we try and do that, just lay that into this mother here, because that's what she is doing. And then she puts the child in it. And I have to believe in that moment she tucked in all her hopes. She tucked her heart. She had to trust God really big then, because that's not easy to take that and to just lay it all in there and say, okay, I'm going to have to trust, because the minute I put you in this thing, I have no control. I have zero control. And she puts it by the reeds in the riverbank. And then it says in verse 4, and his sister, she's Miriam, she stands at a distance. Now, some people read this and they say, well, that's because they had a plan, they knew what they were doing, Miriam's watching to see. But that would be inconsistent with the biblical language, because the biblical language for standing at a distance, when we go and we look at other parts of the Bible where that's used, it's always the people of God don't understand what God is doing, so they stand at a distance and watch and wonder, because their mind is being blown. At Mount Sinai, it said they saw the thunder and the trumpets and they stood at a distance. It says on the cross that Jesus breathed his last and the women wept and stood at a distance. It's when people of God do not understand what God is doing, and in that moment, all they can do is trust God. I don't know if Miriam stood at a distance here and prayed. The Bible doesn't tell us, but I think in that moment, she was wrestling with what it meant to trust God, because there goes her baby brother down the river. And we don't know if there were crocodiles around there at that moment. We don't know any of that. But we know that by faith, Moses' mother and his sister waited and trusted in God, and they let this thing go. And that is just mind-blowing and amazing, because, listen, all of it is a response to what happens in verse 22 of chapter 1. It said, then Pharaoh commanded all his people, every son that is born of the Hebrews, you shall cast into the Nile, but you shall let every daughter live. What God is doing in chapter 2 that we've been talking about is a response of the sin of chapter 1 in verse 22. And so when I read this, one of the questions I kept asking myself all week as I was preparing to teach this is that if Moses' mother does not trust God in chapter 2, then there's no hope because you're still in chapter 1. Mm-hmm. If Miriam, who stands at a distance, doesn't trust God, there is no hope and you're still in chapter 1. And so my question for you, my question for myself is if I don't trust God in my marriage, there is no hope. If I don't trust God with my money, there is no hope. If I don't trust God with my children, there is no hope. If I don't trust God in all the myriad of places, whether it's business or ministry or with my time, with anything, then there is absolutely no hope. And we, like the Israelites, are stuck back in chapter 1 just being enslaved bitterly and harshly and daily by sin and the world. It reminded me of Romans chapter 8, where it says in verse 36, "For your sake we're being killed all day long." Because if there is no hope, it will feel like you are being killed all day long. And we are regarded as sheep to be slaughtered. So see, if you live with no hope, that's where you live. That's your address. But the Bible says, as we go on in Romans 8 and verse 37, no. Why is it no? Because God is at work now. Because God is at work now and he's asking and inviting you to trust him. And what I love about this in Roman is that all of a sudden God gives us the reasons why we can trust him. It says this, "No, because now God is at work. In all these things we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. For I am sure that neither death nor life nor angels nor rulers nor things present nor things to come nor powers nor height nor depth nor anything else in all of creation will be able to separate us from the love of God in Christ Jesus." And friends, I just have to ask you, is after you hear that, tell me how you cannot trust this God. Because in that moment, you are not a sheep for the slaughter. You are not one to be bitterly enslaved. You are one who has hope because God is at work now. And in all these things, you are more than conquerors through him who loved you. So now tell me again, what is it you cannot trust?
Trusting in God and having hope because he can accomplish all things. I heard a message the other day where they were talking about, can you trust God in this little thing? Well, certainly. Can you trust him in this thing? Well, certainly. Is he powerful enough for this thing to accomplish this? Yes. Is he powerful enough for this? Yes. Okay, is there anything he's not powerful enough for? Well, now that I think of it, no.
Yeah.
Okay, trust in him. Sounds pretty easy, Jason. Oftentimes, maybe hard to apply just because of fear or insecurity, or we haven't watched him long enough to see that he always proves himself faithful.
Yeah.
We serve a great God. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of our radio listening family. This is Mark Burns and Pastor Jason Schiffel with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you. Have a great day and night.